And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is July 25th. And I've got such an education over the last few days. It turns out that it's not the job of our elected officials at the federal level to protect the rights of the disabled veterans. Oh no, their job is to style and profile and to get on TV and let everybody know that they're there. AOC is going to run for president, apparently. She smirked at the camera pretending to be handcuffed when she got arrested at the demonstration. Veronica Escobar, who's my congresswoman, that I've asked for help numerous times, gave the Black Power symbol, showing her solidarity with her sisters. But of course, she can't return my phone calls. I've known the woman 20 years, helped to get elected, and her office let me know very quickly that they don't have time for disabled veterans issues. They've got to take care of the undocumented immigrants. And then I went to the veterans advocate for Congressman Tony Gonzalez, who's also from the general area, El Paso. And Escobar's staff called and threatened the staff of Gonzalez, who tucked their tails and ran. So, if you expect help out of your elected officials, you don't understand how the system works. They're there to make money, get cushy jobs, write books, do speeches. But to help their constituents? Don't even think about it. Well, today's July the 25th, 206th day of the year. 159 days remain to the end of the year. In the year 306, Constantine I is proclaimed Roman Emperor by his troops. Now, in those days, elected officials had the time to help their constituents. Not now. Too many TV cameras. 315, the Arch of Constantine is completed near the Colosseum in Rome to commemorate Constantine I's victory over Maxentius at the Milvian Bridge. 677, climax of the siege of Thessalonica by the Slavs in a three-day assault on the city walls. 864, the Edict of Pistres of Charles the Bald orders defensive measures against the Vikings. 1137, Eleanor of Aquitaine marries Prince Louis, later Prince Louis VII of France, at the Cathedral of St. Andre in Bordeaux. 1139, the Battle of the Rig, the Almoravids, led by Ali ibn Yusuf, are defeated by Prince Alfonso Henriquez, who's proclaimed King of Portugal, which was the original Eastern Roman Empire. 1278, the naval battle of Algeciras takes place in the context of the Spanish Reconquista, resulting in a victory for the Emirate of Granada and the Maronite dynasty over the Kingdom of Castile. The Spanish Reconquista was the taking of the Iberian Peninsula away from the Moors who had come over from North Africa. 1467, the Battle of Molinella, first battle in Italy in which firearms are used extensively. 1536, Sebastian de Balcazar, on his search for El Dorado, founds the city of Santiago de Cali. 1538, the city of Guayaquil is founded by the Spanish conquistador Francisco de Orellana and given a name Muy Noble y Muy Leon Ciudad de Santiago de Guayaquil. 1547, Henry II of France is crowned. 1554, Mary I marries Philip II of Spain at Winchester Cathedral. 1567, Don Diego Losada founds the city of Santiago de Leon de Caracas, modern-day Caracas, capital city of Venezuela. 1591, the Duke of Parma is defeated near the Dutch city of Nijmegen by an Anglo-Dutch force led by Maurice of Orange. 1593, Henry IV of France publicly converts from Protestantism to Roman Catholicism. 1609, the English ship Sea Venture en route to Virginia is deliberately driven ashore during a storm at Bermuda to prevent it sinking. Survivors are going to found a new colony there. 1668, a magnitude 8.5 earthquake strikes eastern China, killing over 42,000 people. 1693, Ignacio de Maya founds the Real Santiago de las Sabinas, now known as Sabinas Hidalgo, Nuevo León, Mexico. 1718, at the behest of the Tsar Peter the Great, the construction of the Kadyrov Palace, dedicated to his wife Catherine, begins in Tallinn. 1722, Dummer's War begins along the Maine Massachusetts border. Now, for those who are not familiar with Dummer's War, also known as the Father Rail's War, Lovewell's War, Greylock's War, the 3 Years' War, the Wabanaki New England War, and the Fourth Anglo-Wabanaki War, a series of battles between the New England colonies and the Wabanaki Confederacy, who were allied with New France. The eastern theater of the war was located primarily along the border between New England and Acadia in Maine, well, as Nova Scotia. The western theater was located in northern Massachusetts, Vermont, at the border between Canada, which was New France, and New England. During this particular period of time, Maine and Vermont were part of Massachusetts. The cause of this war on the Maine frontier concerned the border between Acadia and New England, which New France redefined as the Kennebec River in southern Maine. Mainland Nova Scotia came under British control after the siege of Port Royal in 1710 and the Treaty of Utrecht in 1713, but present-day New Brunswick and Maine remained contested between New England and New France. So they were fighting about land. 1755, British Governor Charles Lawrence and the Nova Scotia Council ordered the deportation of the Acadians. They wound up going to Louisiana, eventually. 1759, French and Indian War. Western New York, British forces capture Fort Niagara from the French, who subsequently abandoned Fort Riel. 1783, American Revolutionary War. The war's last action took place on this stage, the Siege of Coeur d'Alene, ended by a preliminary peace agreement. 1788, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart completes his Symphony No. 40 in G minor. 1792, the Brunswick Manifesto is issued to the population of Paris, promising vengeance if the French royal family is harmed. Yeah, that worked. 1797, Horatio Nelson loses more than 300 men in his right arm during the failed conquest attempt at Tenerife. 1799, Napoleon Bonaparte defeats an numerically superior Ottoman army under Mustafa Pasha at the Battle of Aboukir. 1814, during the War of 1812, an American attack on Canada is repulsed. 1824, Costa Rica annexes Guanacaste from Nicaragua. 1837, the first commercial use of an electrical telegraph successfully demonstrated in London by William Cook and Charles Wheatstone. 1853, Joaquin Murrieta, the famous California bandit known as the Robin Hood of El Dorado, is killed. 1861, American Civil War. Congress passes the Crittenden-Johnson Resolution, stating that the war is being fought to preserve the Union and not to end slavery. Of course, that got overlooked in the excitement of being an activist. 1866, U.S. Congress passes legislation authorizing the rank of General of the Army. Lieutenant General Ulysses S. Grant becomes the first to be promoted to this rank. 1868, the Wyoming Territory is established. 1869, the Japanese Diamos began returning their land holdings to the emperor as part of the Meiji Restoration reforms. 1894, the first Sino-Japanese War begins when a Japanese fired on a Chinese warship. 1897, American author Jack London embarks on a sailing trip to take part in the Klondike's Gold Rush, from which he wrote his first successful stories. 1898, Spanish-American War. American invasion of Spanish-held Puerto Rico begins as the U.S. Army troops under General Nelson Miles land and secure the port of Guanica. 1908, Ajinomoto is founded. Kahuni Okada of the Tokyo Imperial University discovers a key ingredient in kombu soup stock is monosodium glutamate, MSG, and patents a process for its manufacture. 1909, Louis Barrault makes the first flight across English Channel in a heavier-than-air machine from Calais to Dover in 37 minutes. 1915, RFC Captain Leno Hawker becomes the first British pursuit aviator to earned a Victoria Cross. 1917, Sir Robert Borden introduces the first income tax in Canada as a temporary measure. Lowest brackets 4% and the highest is 25%. That's how they sold it here in the U.S. as a temporary method to fund the war, but it got so much money for the government that when have they ever turned their back on a tax? 1925, Telegraph Agency of the Soviet Union is established. 1934, the Nazis assassinate Austrian Chancellor Engelbert Dollfuss in a failed coup attempt. 1940, General André Goussin orders the Swiss Army to resist German invasion and makes surrender illegal. 1942, the Norwegian Manifesto calls for nonviolent resistance to the German occupation. 1943, World War II, Benito Mussolini is forced out of office by the king, encouraged by the Grand Council of Fascism, and is replaced by Pietro Badoglio. 1944, World War II, Operation Spring is one of the bloodiest days for the 1st Canadian Army during the war. 1946, the Crossroads Baker device is the first underwater nuclear weapons test. 1956, 45 miles south of Nantucket Island, the Italian ocean liner SS Andrea Doria collides with the MS Stockholm in heavy fog and sinks the next day. 51 people die. 1957, a Tunisian king, Mohammed VIII Al-Amin, is replaced by President Abilio Bourguiba. 1958, the African Regroupment Party holds its first congress in Cotonou. 1961, Cold War. In a speech, John F. Kennedy emphasizes any attack on Berlin is an attack on NATO. They paid attention to him. If our current leader said it today, he'd be laughed out of the building. 1965, Bob Dylan goes electric at the Newport Folk Festival, signaling a major change in folk and rock music. 1969, Vietnam War. President Nixon declares the Nixon Doctrine, stating the U.S. now expects its Asian allies to take care of their own military defense. That's the start of the Vietnamization of the war. 1971, the Sohagpur massacre is perpetrated by the Pakistani army. 1973, Soviet Mars 5 space probe is launched. 1976, Viking program. Viking 1 takes the famous Face on Mars photo. 1978, Puerto Rican police shoot two nationalists in the Cerro Maravilla murders. 1978, the birth of Louis Joy Brown, the first human to have been born after conception by in vitro fertilization, took place on this date. 1979, in accord with the Egypt-Israel peace treaty, Israel begins its withdrawal from the Sinai Peninsula. 1983, Black July, 37 Tamil political prisoners at the Walakata High Security Prison in Colombia massacred by fellow Sinhalese prisoners. 1984, Salyut 7, cosmonaut Svetlana Savitskaya becomes the first woman to perform a spacewalk. 1993, Israel launches a massive attack against Lebanon, what the Israelis call Operation Accountability, and the Lebanese call it the Seven-Day War. 1993, St. James Church massacre occurs in Kenilworth, Cape Town, South Africa. Now, this was a massacre perpetrated on St. James Church of England in South Africa in Kenilworth on July 25th, 1993, by four members of the Azanian People's Liberation Army. 11 members of the congregation were killed and 58 wounded. 1998, the attackers were granted amnesty for their acts by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. What's a little murder between friends? In 1994, Israel and Jordan signed the Washington Declaration that formally ends the state of war that existed between the nations since 1948. 1995, a gas bottle explodes in St. Michel station of Line B of the Paris Regional Train Network. 8 are killed and 80 are wounded. 1996, in a military coup in Burundi, Pierre Buyoya deposes Silvestre Ntibantunganya. 2000, Concorde Air France flight 4590 crashes at Paris Charles de Gaulle Airport, kills 113 people. 2007, Pratibha Patil is sworn in as India's first female president. 2010, WikiLeaks publishes classified documents about the war in Afghanistan, one of the largest leaks in U.S. military history. 2018, Assawada attacks, coordinated attacks occur in Syria. And in 2019, National Extreme Heat Record set this day in the UK and Belgium, the Netherlands, and Germany during the July 2019 European heat wave. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. You know, I just had a most interesting conversation with a member of Senator Ted Cruz's staff. And she sounded like she was in her 20s, but apparently she is a legal genius. She knew what was legal, what should be covered by the law, and what should be covered by federal investigation. Basically, it boiled down to the fact that I'm supposed to just take whatever she says and go off like a good problem. So Ted Cruz doesn't have to sweat or do anything that might make anybody mad. Christian Feast Day, Anne in Eastern Christianity, Christopher in Western Christianity, Kukupas, Cladisend, James the Great in Western Christianity, John the First, Agnes, Julian of Lamans, Magnaric of Trier, early stay on which Father's Day can fall, July 31st is the latest. It's celebrated on the last Sunday in July in the Dominican Republic. It's also the earliest day on which National Tree Planting Day can fall. July 31st is the latest, celebrated on the last Sunday in July in Australia. Earliest day on which Naval Day can fall. July 31st is the latest, celebrated on the last Sunday in July in Russia. Guanacaste Day in Costa Rica. National Bahia Day in Jamaica. National Day of Galicia in Galicia. Puerto Rico Constitution Day in Puerto Rico. And in Tunisia, it is Republic Day. Yes, I think it's fascinating how much effort our elected officials put into finding reasons not to help their constituents rather than picking up the phone and saying, what can we do to help? I mean, if an elected official did that, they would never be beaten in an election. As it is, I'm going to tell everybody and their dog that Ted Cruz does not help, especially disabled veteran constituents. Not to mention Veronica Escobar is too busy being solid with her sisters to worry about disabled veterans. 864, the Edict of Pistres of Charles de Bald orders defensive measures against the Vikings. 1120, a large fire in the Church of St. Madeleine of Vézelay in France kills 1,000 pilgrims and damages the church. 1139, Count Alfonso I of Portugal is proclaimed king. 1360, the Jews are expelled from Breslau, Silesia. 1446, foundation stone laid for King's College Chapel in Cambridge. We have an active shooting going on at Dallas Love Field in Dallas, Texas. All kinds of lunatics running around with guns. But if you defend yourself, you're going to prison, son. Spanish conquest of Tripoli by Pietro Navarro for the Aragon crown. Over 3,000 killed, more than 5,000 inhabitants enslaved. 1511, Portuguese forces in Alfonso de Albuquerque first assault the prosperous trading city of Malacca in the Malay Peninsula. Alfonso de Albuquerque was admiral and duke of Goa. 1519, San Cristobal de La Habana forms in Cuba. 1521, about 300 heretics burned in Frisian Market, Ghent. 1547, Henry II of France is crowned king. 1564, Maximilian II succeeds his father, Ferdinand I, as Holy Roman Emperor. 1570, Battle of Amiens-le-Duc in Burgundy. Huguenot victory forces Charles IX of France to agree to a peace treaty and ends the Third War of Religion. 1585, Amsterdam bans 45 Roman Catholics. 1652, Nikita Menin becomes Patriarch of Russian Orthodox Church. 1670, Don Juan Domingo Zuniga y Fonseca becomes the Governor General of Southern Netherlands. 1729, North Carolina becomes a royal colony. 1745, on this date, the Jacobite Rising began. Bonnie Prince Charlie landed on Eriskay in the Hebrides. He is a pretender to the British throne. 1758, in the Seven Years' War, the island battery at Fortress Louisbourg in Nova Scotia is silenced and all French warships are destroyed or taken prisoner. 1759, the British capture Fort Niagara from the French. That was also during the Seven Years' War. 1775, Maryland issues currency depicting George III trampling on the Magna Carta. 1792, Dutch patriots exiles found Bataaf's Legion. 1795, the first stone of the Pontsiskenite Aqueduct is laid. 1814, Battle of Niagara Falls, also called Lundy's Lane. Americans defeat the British. 1814, English engineer George Stephenson introduces his first steam locomotive, a traveling engine designed for hauling coal on the Killingworth Wagonway, named Blücher. 1822, General Augustin de Iturbide, crowned Austrian Augustine I, the first emperor of Mexico. 1824, Costa Rica annexes Guanacaste from Nicaragua. 1830, Charles X signs the July Ordinances, suspending freedom of the press, among other things. 1832, the first railroad accident in the U.S., the Granite Railway in Quincy, Massachusetts, it killed one person. Hardly worth mentioning, just one person died. 1835, Ibrahim Pasha's army attacks Jewish settlers of Hebron in Palestine. 1848, the first Battle of Custoza. Austrians under Radetzky beat the Italians. 1850, gold is discovered on the Rogue River in Oregon. 1854, Walter Hunt is awarded the first U.S. patent for a paper shirt collar. 1860, the first U.S. intercollegiate billiard match took place, Harvard versus Yale. 1861, skirmish at Fort Fillmore, New Mexico Territory. The rebels attacked the Union troops. 1863, saw a skirmish at Barbie's Crossroads in Virginia. 1866, David Farragut appointed as first admiral in the Navy. 1868, Congress forms the Wyoming Territory. That was Dakota, Utah, and Idaho. 1871, the carousel is patented by Wilhelm Schneider in Davenport, Iowa. 1898, first U.S. troops land and occupy Puerto Rico at Guernica Bay. 1901, Emily Hobhouse addresses public meetings in Britain on the concentration camps established during the South African War. 1902, 3 years after winning the title from English boxer Bob Fitzsimmons, American champion James J. Jeffries repeats the act. with an 8th round knockout in San Francisco for the heavyweight crown. In 1903, the castle on top of Telegraph Hill in San Francisco closes. 1907, Korea becomes a protectorate of Japan. 1912, the Comoros are proclaimed a French colony. think we've come to the end of our little history segment here. You know, there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed in this country, but our elected officials are too busy, as I put it this morning, styling and profiling to make themselves look good for the camera so they get more voters. The mere fact that they are completely ineffectual at what they're doing is not something we're supposed to look at, because there are betters. And even if they're 20 years old, like this young lady sounded this morning out of Ted Cruz's office, she is so much smarter than anybody else because of her job. Sad thing is people think they really are being represented by their elected officials. Nothing could be further from the truth. You got AOC smirking for the camera while she pretends to be handcuffed. You got Veronica Escobar giving the Black Power symbol, showing her solidarity with her sisters about abortion. But how about all the other constituents that are not concerned about abortion?
Oh, everybody ought to be.
Why? Are you concerned about the rights of undocumented immigrants is what Escobar's office is concerned about when they're not concerned about abortion? I've got 4 open complaints with her office, and they are not taking one single step to try to deal with any of them. Why? Because I'm not a female, because I'm a disabled veteran, and disabled veterans should be seen and not heard. You know, in the old days, committal to a lunatic asylum was certainly worse than being sent to prison. At least in prison, despite the freezing cold conditions and lack of edible food, you had a chance of a possible date for release. But if you went to an asylum, highly unusual for there to be an actual release date. In a majority of cases, it was like being handed a life sentence without the possibility of parole. And add to this, it required just a couple of signatures and family members to have a person committed. A vengeful wife or husband, a sister, a brother-in-law, maybe seeking to shorten a person's life in order to get their hands on an endowment or a family inheritance, can make the case to their family doctor that the person in question was insane, needed to be locked away in an asylum. With, of course, the person having them locked up becoming their conservator. This led to a lot of Machiavellian schemes by family members. And Gothic books written at the time accurately depict just how easy it'd be to seal the person's fate and consign them to almost certain death in an asylum, with often very little, if any, evidence of madness being required. The Trans-Allegheny Asylum in Virginia lists of reasons for admittance found in an official document, no less, included such things as greediness, asthma, political excitement, religious enthusiasm, desertion of husband, time of life, superstition, hard study, overaction of the mind, tobacco use, imaginary female trouble, laziness, and novel reading. If you use that standard, I think we could take the entire city government of El Paso and lock them up as well many of them should be. Talking therapies were the latest thing on psychiatrists' minds at the asylum, when instead they could let themselves loose on a person's brain carrying out horrific experimental operations in order to satisfy their quest for finding the cause for mental disturbance in a person. Locked in the asylum, the patient would be forcibly subjected to the most horrifying and sometimes bizarre experimentation, which included electric shocks to the brain, cutting pieces of the brain out to see if it stopped their antisocial behavior. It was in the 1930s lobotomies and electric convulsive treatment first began to be carried out. And while doctors believed they often saw improvement in patients after repeatedly shocking their brains with electricity, patients regularly died after having a lobotomy. Indeed, the doctors used instruments that looked strangely similar to ice picks. And when the doctor wouldn't drag and screaming patients away to the operating rooms, they'd experiment in other ways by designing the most uncomfortable and painful treatments. Some of them included hosing patients down on a regular basis with ice-cold blasts of water, forcing them into steel cages or boxes to be kept there till they calmed down, tying them almost permanently to their beds, with the constrained patient barely able to move their arms and legs at all. And sometimes this would last for days or weeks. But I'm sure our elected officials would say, well, if the doctor thinks it's so, it's so. We don't have to look at the facts, like this young lady this morning. Well, since these are legal issues, then we can't get involved. The mere fact that it's a crime doesn't mean any law enforcement agency is involved. But oh no, she's smarter than me. She knew. As an example, there was the lunatic box, which was sometimes alternately called the coffin, and used in the 18th century. Victims are placed inside of it in a standing position, and a plank of wood put over the opening in front of their face, so they were encased in complete darkness as they forcibly stood for hours on end. They weren't let out to use the bathroom or eat. They'd be left like that night and day, for weeks at a time. Padded cells were the norm, where patients classified as either aggressive or suicidal were thrown in and left alone for weeks. In the 1700s, Austrian doctor Franz Mesmer held the belief that an invisible force affected everything. And his theory was that the gravitational forces of the moon caused changes in a person's bodily fluids, and this somehow led to mental derangement. If he could disrupt this gravitational force, he was sure he could restore a person's balance. And to counterbalance the effects of the moon, he felt that magnets should be used. Maybe this is where the idea of howling at the moon came from, for it's long been thought that our moods and tempers are affected by the moon. It's a recorded truth that emergency services have far more call-outs on a full moon, and the escalation of people's behavior toward the extreme is often seen by police and ambulance teams on the nights of the full moon. However, there seemed to be little effect on the behavior of patients who were treated by having magnets placed on them. Although the patients themselves said it helped them, it's more likely due to it being far less brutal treatment than the many other inhumane ones they were used to. And the patients really don't want these treatments used on them if they can have any way to get out of it. Regardless, the medical profession ultimately deemed it a useless attempt at a cure and resorted back to the cruel and barbaric physical treatments. The first lunatic asylum in England was the Bethlehem Royal Hospital in London. First started to admit patients in 1407. Here the treatments were given to the insane patients by doctors who weren't even licensed. We got some of those at the VA. It wasn't until the 1770s that the Madhouse Act was passed in Parliament that required doctors to have the proper training. Hospitals completely filthy and the care for patients was non-existent. Inmates are often left chained to the cold stone walls or locked inside damp, dark cells for days at a time. Brutal, bizarre treatments, including being put in the chair. The patient was strapped into it by restraints, then it was levered up into the air. Then it was spun round and round repeatedly. The idea behind it was that it would be a punishment that would reform their bad behavior. You get spun enough, you're not going to be crazy anymore. Unsurprisingly, for some reason, it didn't work. American doctor Benjamin Rush adopted the treatment in America under the belief that mental illness was caused by congestion in the brain. One is of the opinion that spinning a patient would help to clear this congestion and as a result, remove the mental illness from the patients. Amazingly, he was wrong. All that happened were very dizzy and nauseous patients who were no less mentally disturbed. In fact, it were probably worse, and then they would throw up in your shoes. At Bethlehem, London, and what was absolutely astounding but completely true, patients are actually treated as though they were exhibits in a zoo. Members of the general public were free to visit, and on public holidays in particular, people flocked there to look at the nuts. Indeed, that's how it became nicknamed Bedlam, which then became fully embedded in the English language as a colloquialism for a mad, hectic, unruly scene. French diarist César Sassori wrote an account of his visit to Bedlam. He said, "In a wide gallery, there are cells where lunatics of every description are held, chained. People visit and amuse themselves by watching them." The insane asylum was, in fact, one of the most popular and entertaining tourist attractions in London. It was said that wealthy gentlemen of London society would even poke the patients through the bars with their walking sticks just to provoke them and set them off. But people from every class came, and much like the old public executions, went there to taunt and provoke, ridicule the inmates. Patients were kept in cages, much due to the belief back then that mental illness was a result of demonic or spirit attack. The patients were locked in cages. Those in charge thought it would help keep the evil spirits from breaking out and going into the general population. Similar, but maybe even worse, is the ghastly history of the Paris morgue. In the 1800s, unidentified dead bodies would be taken to a morgue in central Paris where the authorities would hope families or friends would go to make claim of the corpses and help identify them. But what started out with innocent intentions soon became a place where the curious and morbidly inclined sightseers would go, because it was open to all the public and it was free. The word got around and soon crowds began to flock there to look at the bodies displayed on tables for all to view. Being a public building, anybody's allowed to visit, and soon so many people were coming there to gape and gawk that the premises had to be relocated to a larger building behind Notre Dame Cathedral. But it still allowed the public to come in. There was a larger mausoleum where bodies were laid out on black marble tables behind a huge sheet of glass with a skylight above them to illuminate the bodies. The more lurid and gruesome the crime committed on these helpless murder victims, the more the numbers of visitors swelled. And among the visitors who felt compelled to visit the macabres, translated as stiff corpse, were none other than Charles Dickens, who wrote of his frequent visits in his journals, describing the morgue as an old acquaintance, and said of his trips that it was a strange sight on which I've contemplated many times. 1885, the Harvard Crimson Journal writes about their visit to the now famous morgue. Said faces mutilated, gashed faces, awful contortions, hideous leers, gaping mouths, now fixed forever in rigid agony, hands outstretched to the city, whispering, come to me, and we hear and shudder and turn a cold and come away. In the winter of 1876, two mysterious trunks arrived at the morgue. When they were opened up, they were found to contain two separate halves of an unidentified woman's body. She'd been chopped in half, and her top half put in one of the trunks, the bottom half in the other. News of the gruesome delivery soon spread throughout Paris, and quickly thousands of people came to see her. Many as 40,000 people a day jostled to get a look. Very peculiarly, many of those visiting laid claim to knowing who she was, though all of them were found to be lying. Eventually, though, patrons at a local cafe visited the morgue and positively identified her as a widow who'd been a frequent customer who was now living with a retired soldier. Well, when he was questioned by the police, he eventually confessed to her murder, saying they'd fought and he'd accidentally cut her in half. That could happen. 1907, the morgue finally sealed from public visits and a new concern for common decency. Perhaps most disappointed were the journalists of both the highbrow and the more sensational newspapers, all of whom had just now lost a crucial visual aid with which to describe their death and murder cases. From Paris, let's go to the island of Poviglia, close to Venice. But it's not an island anybody would want to stay on, as the reputation is one of the most haunted and sinister places on the planet. dark history lies in it, once being used as a quarantine base for victims of the medieval plague that killed millions of people. As soon as anybody in Venice showed the slightest signs of a fever, they were taken screaming and pleading not to go by boat to the island where they were left to die. Once they died, they were simply thrown on top of piles of other dead bodies, but those forced to work there, and a conservative estimate says at least 150,000 people met their end on the island. Then in the 1920s, the island became the site of an asylum for the mentally insane. It wasn't long after it opened that patients began to report they were having disturbing dreams about dead bodies, and indeed, in the daytime, they'd run screaming to staff telling them they could see the dead bodies. Some said they couldn't sleep at night because of the screaming of the dead. Of course, because these patients already been determined to be nutso, nobody took any notice of them, and maybe they stopped seeing the dead spirits anyway, because it wasn't long before the doctors took to performing experimental treatments on them, which included hammering ice picks into their brains to undertake lobotomies and thereby deaden their brains from any ability to even think straight. One of the doctors met a terrifying end himself when he jumped, or maybe he was pushed, off the bell tower. Well, the asylum was put up for sale in the 1960s, and the private owner bought it and moved his family in after having the place rebuilt into a grand house. But according to legend, the family stayed there for just one night after their young daughter was found with her face ripped open by something unknown. Just got a notification about the shooting at Dallas Love Field. Passengers were hiding under their chairs to try to keep from being shot. At the Royal Earlswood Hospital in Surrey, England, the word royal held a clue to a very well-kept secret for many years. Opened in the late 1800s, this hospital specialized in the housing of what they called idiots, many of whom came to this country and went to become members of Congress. It was a splendid architectural building set in beautiful woodland grounds, and was here that two cousins of the Queen of England lived for over 50 years. They both had learning disabilities, but fortunately they were residents at a time when the more cruel treatments had by then ceased being used. In the terms of kinder treatments used, sometimes patients in asylums are even given a little light entertainment. The New York Times in 1874 describes the occasions that patients at the Canton Asylum in South Dakota were allowed to have dances. Couples came into the dance hall in two long lines, male and female, and stood in silence facing their partners. And when the music came, their movements followed, which for the most part was of shuffling. Peculiar about each one of them, and yet in every one there was some sort of ecstasy. For the most part, such treats were rare, and decades of ill treatment and brutal experimentation led many to wonder some kind of imprint was left in the very bowels of many of these now abandoned insane asylums. When Clarion Ledger reporter Melanie Sanders visited the abandoned Coon Asylum for the Insane in Mississippi, she took a team photographer in a local paranormal group. She didn't know quite what to expect. She was a skeptic, you see. The asylum was originally built as a hospital in the 1830s, but it closed down in the 1980s and lay abandoned. The halls were dark with broken tiles and broken windows. As they proceeded to walk through the corridors, their feet crunched into debris beneath them. One of the paranormal teams told on a previous investigation they had used electronic recording equipment. They had captured the voice of a young girl who was saying, "Do you want to play with me?" Now, Sanders doubted this was really the case, searching in her mind for a rational explanation and assuming it was probably the result of the investigators' overactive imaginations. This time through, they didn't hear any voices, but something else strange happened. Team had with them an electromagnetic meter and watched for when it would spike upwards, which would indicate that some form of energy was close to them. Quite a common thing on ghost hunts, and who knows if it really provides proof of the presence of those of the afterlife. But it was when they entered the morgue that it really spiked. They couldn't see anything inside the morgue, just an abandoned table in the middle and cupboards around the walls. Didn't sense any kind of presence, but they asked questions aloud to try to get some kind of response just in case there was something there. But they didn't hear anything, and eventually they all left the room. Well, they returned later on. What was very strange was that in the middle of the room there was a little table that was covered in dust. They had all seen it when they were in the room earlier, It was just a dust-covered table. But the second time, there appeared to be some kind of writing on the table. Somebody had written in the dust, apparently with their finger, and they spelled out the word help, written backward. They all accused each other of having done it, but they all knew they'd all been together the entire time and in that room and afterwards as they continued their tour. At no time were any of them missing. No any of them could have snuck back and written that message. Never did find an explanation for it. Once named as one of the freakiest places in the world by CNN News, Gonkyo Mental Asylum in South Korea was shut down in the late 1990s when the owner was rumored to have fled the country amid growing reports of patients being found mysteriously dead in the hospital. That's a giveaway, don't you think? It was said the owner of the private facility was himself, even more mentally deranged than his patients. Legend has it the doctor's own mental imbalance came shortly after he opened the hospital, after he was given a picture drawn by a patient. At first glance, it looked like a picture of a normal human figure, but on closer inspection, that image appeared to show a demonic and highly disturbing creature. Absent-mindedly, he put the drawing on a window ledge inside his office, and at first, the image didn't trouble him at all, and he went on with his daily duties. But over time, he started to see that same demonic-looking creature in the drawing standing near him in the rooms of the hospital, following him around, appearing out of nowhere, and whenever he would appear, it followed after him with those deafening of noises. It felt as though the doctor's ears were about to explode. Strange thing was, nobody else appeared to hear the noise or see the entities. He said that eventually the figure had come to life from the drawing in his office, which followed him everywhere and taunted him relentlessly until he was a cowering mess, trying to cover his eyes and ears, and eventually drove the owner to the brink of a nervous breakdown, and his mental state never recovered. As to how the dozens of patients there died to this day is still unknown, but many believe they were somehow murdered. Those who've since visited this now derelict and empty asylum can't help but notice that it seems to have been evacuated in something of a rush. Some accounts say this was due to a more rational explanation of sewage problems, but others in the locality believe it was because of the murders. The entire building still has the signs of complete disarray. Chairs are overturned, books are half open, medical records lie strewn about, and a set of straitjackets are still hanging on the wall. Journalist Sarah Edge and photographer Colin Dabbs once visited that place. She said logic was on my side for the first 30 minutes of the experience. Then something called my rational thinking into question. The door of room 222 suddenly shifted open. The creak was loud enough to alert us to it. We were on the second floor and there was no wind. Neither one of us uttered a word. The air was suddenly foul, and I haven't felt such a heaviness in it until that moment. Sharp sensed there was a third party in the room overpowered her, and she felt an intense awareness they weren't welcome. Well, her logic was still there, but it leaves the moment she sees a shadow flicker. A shadow from who? They decided to keep walking, but attention followed them that was unwavering, with a feeling of dread for each room they reached. The air was heavy, expectant, a stench permeated the air. Strangely, as on their return to go back downstairs, I could see all the doors of the rooms on the second floor that were all open were now shut tight. April Slaughter, founder of Paranormal Source, conducted an investigation at the now demolished Lehigh Mental Asylum in Utah. Says she spent hundreds of hours there. She also said, what I encountered in this building became dear to me and I miss it more than I can express. It wasn't rare for me to spend hours there alone, experiencing things I'll never forget. It made me a real believer. The hospital itself gained a terrible reputation for the manner in which it treated its patients and their dead bodies. At one point, the basement crematorium was not big enough to take the large number of bodies, and the staff would dismember them in order to fit them in. Well, it's said that the ghosts of those who feel they were mistreated in death, or weren't treated respectfully in death, said to return seeking vengeance. One EVP recording Slaughter captured an eerie voice that warned her to get out quick. And right behind that came another voice that said, well, where's the way out? She said, I've been told to get out numerous times, and there have been other times when profanities have been used, but I don't allow myself to be fearful, as I firmly believe that fear itself is a form of energy that the spirits can feed off of. She said in one of the rooms she saw a black mass crawling toward her on the floor. Others have witnessed these things too, crawling down the walls toward them. The Illinois Paranormal Research Association, with over 10 years' experience between them, went to an abandoned Bartonville asylum for the insane in Illinois. Veteran investigator Chris Fleming was one of the crew. Using EVP recording equipment, they asked if anyone was there with him. And they could hear a lot of muttering. Voices became slowly clearer. Excuse me. Then he said, "Did you die from tuberculosis?" And the reply was, "Chris, you die, you die." And he said, "Do you know my name?" And their response, "Yes, you die." And then things got worse. A female member of the team asked the spirits to talk one at a time because it's hard to decipher what was being said. The voice replied, "Bitch," and other much worse insults followed. And Chris said, "Well, why do you say that?" And the reply came, "Because masters do." Well, a lot of other insults came, and the team decided it's time to turn the machine off and leave. And they understand that the voice talking to them is clearly demonic, and there's no good that can come from talking to a demon. Then they think they see a shadow person in the distance. At another investigation in 2010, they investigated the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane in Indianapolis. While filming in a dark corridor, they all heard a loud growl, and then it came again. They captured it on tape and put it on YouTube. Voice recorder picked it up most clearly. There were no natural causes to explain it. They debunked other noises early in the evening as a branch hitting a window and another coming from a moving door that's been caught by a slightly open window, allowing a breeze that caused the door to move a little bit. The growling was loud and it was terrifying, and they all heard it. No enhancement to the sound. Then, of course, you can find all that on YouTube. An approximate 47-second point. It's possible there's also some kind of black shadow entity moving from the top of the wall on the right side. So if you're brave enough to venture in an abandoned insane asylum in a dark night and think nothing is there, it's possible that there is something there. Just like if you think you're being represented by your elected officials, you're nuttier than these folks are. At any time, there's a strong chance there could be a demon there whose natural domain is in these kinds of buildings where the energy is pain and anxiety and anger, misery and torture. Left by the spirits of the dead who dwelt there. Perfect feeding ground for a demon. They feed off fear and pain. When thousands have died in abandonment and unhappiness and suffered inhumane, torturous treatments, the energy they leave behind is full of malevolence and anger, and the demons love that. Let's talk about Downey Asylum in California, 2008. Two young men went on an amateur investigation and took a camera. It's derelict, dark, and deserted, and they're not sure they want to go in, but they've come this far, and being the one to say to the other they want to go back is not an option. Neither one wanted to save face. So they head toward the empty, echoing rooms and descend to the basement. It's hollow and dim, and as they reach the bottom of the steps, they see a mirror hanging on a wall. As they walk toward it, they can't resist looking into the glass, and as they see their reflections, they're not prepared for the groan they hear coming from behind them. And worse is yet to come. When they quickly leave the room and go into the boiler room, it's sealed off, so they only have the door through which they came and the stairs downward. No wonders or any other type of exits. They start to look around in the darkness, and that's when they hear an ungodly growl. Definitely loud, and it's very close to them. They decided they have to leave, and the space is too confining, the darkness is too great, and the sound of the inhuman entity is far too menacing. One of the boys, his name was Michael Pickle, and he was in a pickle at this point, said it was no animal. My friend with me whispered it was maybe cats, but there were none down there. They searched the room, and nothing was in there, and nothing ran out. The only way out of the room was by going up the stairs, and they were standing on the stairs. No windows, nothing could escape. Well, a contributor to website called Ghost Place Forum writes, and me and girlfriends decided we'd go to the old abandoned institute in Augusta. Started walking through the woods to reach the buildings, and we had to jump over the fence. As we walked through an open door, I instantly felt nervous. It wasn't until we got to the basement that I began to feel lightheaded. Not only that, I felt like I had a fever. I pointed out I could see something down there that looked like a face. I got outside first, and it wasn't too long after one of her friends started crying her eyes out and hanging on to her. I asked her what happened, as I was turning to look around to see where we just come, and there's in the doorway stood a young girl. Well, they decided it was time to go elsewhere, so they ran to the fence and climbed over, and other friends started hyperventilating and freaking out, moving their legs, but they were being touched by something they couldn't see. Well, the narrator looked behind her and saw a man's face in the building window. It wasn't human, it didn't appear, and the others saw it as well. They tried to stay calm and started walking away, and halfway back to the car, they heard a sudden inhuman screech that made them run all the way to the car. They sat in the car and tried to calm down, but freaked out when they saw the man and the girl walking down the path toward the car. They drove away, but all the next day, they'd been getting touched and scratched and seeing this girl. They're terrified, and they just wanted to go away. Well, I've got story after story after story about haunted asylums and morgues and cemeteries and other places nobody in their right mind would want to go. And we're going to talk more about them in our next show. But until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.